किशोरानंदना गज जनरं जना शोभानंदना गज जनरं जना जमुना खीर पान चारी राधा माधव कुंजरी हारी जय परिवराज आचार्य अष्टोत्तर श्री श्री महाराज के बारे में। Obhoy Charanara Vinda Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Jaya Om Vishnupada Acharga Ashtotera Sita Shri Shyamadha's Divine Grace Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vindi Ki Jai Iskan BBT Founder Acharga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Naam Acharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Once a whole Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shaddai Tigadada Sri Vasudhi Gaura Bhakti Vinda Ki Jai Sri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopina Shama Kondrata Kondi Giri Govardhana Ki Jai Sri Maya Purnavadit Dham Ki Jai Ganga Mayi Ki Jai Jamuna Mayi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Tulsi Devi Ki Jai Shama Veta Bhakti Vinda Ki Jai Nitai Govara Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. Glories to Sri Guru and Jai. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Shri Mate Bhakti Vedanta Shamini Tinamane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nirvisesa sanyavadi paschachita satarine Mukam karoti vachalam pangulangayati girin Yakrapatamaham bande Sri Guru dinatharinam Sri Krishna Chaitana Prabhu Nithananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vashtari Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, 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 Hare Hare Panchaka Patru Vyascha Krupa Sindhu Vyavacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namah. So, do we have a microphone? The wireless? Parthasarathi is going to ask questions. He's the incarnation of Maharaj Pariksit. So he's always asking questions and let's see where it goes.
Anywhere?
See where, yeah, anything. Related to Krishna consciousness.
Yeah. One thing I've been thinking about lately is suffering. And it seems like in the beginning of Krishna consciousness, it's favorable to be uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. It pushes you to seek comfort elsewhere.
Yes.
So I'm wondering, from Krishna's perspective, what is the process of being arranged in a setting that's comfortable for your mind and senses?
What does Krishna think about that?
What is that transition? Say you're in an uncomfortable position, like, you know, doing regular temple seva. You know, at what point do you get thrown in a place that's your nature, in a place that's more...
Yeah. Well, I could expand the question also. At what point does the suffering end? That's also part of it. So you're asking, when you're first a devotee, you just engage in all the necessary services, and then at what point do you engage more according to your nature, where you feel more satisfied? And when you're not engaged according to your nature, you tend to suffer sometimes. That's the idea, yeah. You know, we could answer in different ways, but one way to answer it is that it's just like a father who has a business. He'll give a little bit, maybe a little money or a small position, and see how he uses it. And if he uses it well, he'll give him more. And so like that, Krishna wants you to be engaged in a way that inspires you, but he also wants to see if you're willing to do whatever is required in the moment. And because he doesn't want to give you something that may not be good for you. So maybe it's possible it wouldn't be good for you right now, just doing what you like. Maybe you've become complacent. But he wants you to engage according to your nature. I mean, that's Bhagavad Gita. But if there's other service that's required, that maybe it's not your nature, maybe it's difficult, and oftentimes Prabhupada would see that that was healthy for the devotee because it was helping them transcend their selfishness. Because engaging according to your nature could also turn into selfishness, and it's not supposed to. It's supposed to just be the natural way you would serve Krishna. The best way, according to your ability. But Krishna really likes to see your willingness to sacrifice, because anything can be turned into selfishness. Even chanting your rounds can turn into selfishness. Even trying to get rid of anarthas can be turned into selfishness, because I don't want anarthas, because I'll feel better without anarthas. You know, or I want to be advanced, so people will appreciate that I'm advanced. You know? So Krishna really wants to see what you're ready for and what you're not ready for. So sometimes he puts you in situations and he's just looking to see what you're going to do. You're going to complain or whatever. You know, I can tell you a story. Maybe this will answer your question. So I was in a situation like you're describing, but very, very difficult for me, in two ways. It was against my nature and the culture. It was foreign to me. I couldn't relate to it. So I had a service in a country, and the culture was just like everything that was made me uncomfortable, you could say. And the service made me uncomfortable. But I had committed to it, and I did it, and a lot of good came from it. And then at a certain point, I told the leaders that I've hit my threshold. I don't think I can continue. So I gracefully pulled out, but what really I was called to do, I did. And it was one of the most difficult times of my life. And this amazing thing happened after that. So I left the country, I went to India. And I would say for about 3 months, this sounds strange to say, but I would say for about 3 months, everything I thought that I wanted appeared. Not that I thought I wanted. Everything I wanted, I would think, you know, it would really be nice to meet these devotees and travel with them. And that day I met the devotees and they said, this is a true story, they said, we're going to Puri, do you want to come with us? And so it was like that. I would just think, it would really be nice to work with this devotee. Next week I get a phone call, you know, why don't you join our program? It was like that. So I really understood that when you make sacrifices for Krishna, he definitely is pleased and he rewards. It was amazing. And so it was obvious that Krishna was reciprocating. And then subsequently, Krishna let me do more of the things according to my nature that I like. So time, place, when it's right. Also, you can relate it to chanting. Because sometimes we're chanting japa and we're not really tasting anything. And so we can think, okay, Krishna's looking at us now. Thinking, well, what are you going to do now? You're not going to chant? You're not going to be enthusiastic because you're not getting a taste? Or will you be enthusiastic anyway? Even you don't get a taste. And sometimes we have to think, well, this is not for me, it's for Krishna. So I'm just chanting for his pleasure, so I'm okay. Taste, no taste. And then what happens? Then Krishna gives you the taste. Because you were willing to do it, whether you got a taste or not. So I'm not saying we should engage according to our nature, but as you know, that's not always possible. Yes. But the main thing also, in addition, is Prabhupada, I mean, we have seen devotees so surrendered, so sacrificing their own comforts, their own needs, their own inspiration to do service, they surrender themselves right out of ISKCON. In other words, they self-destroyed because they sacrificed beyond their level of qualification. So there are many places in which Prabhupada said, you know, do some service. It doesn't matter what it is, but do something that inspires you, that you're satisfied with. But especially when you're living in a temple, you don't always have that choice. But and it's also a question of leadership, who can see what you need and give you what they feel would be good for you. And, okay, well, let me tell you something else. This situation I was in that was difficult It was very helpful because it was so difficult. I had to develop tolerance greater than I ever had to develop before. So it was actually good. So maybe Krishna wanted me to become more tolerant and more stable. So he put me in a situation where if I wasn't tolerant, I wouldn't have been able to do it. So sometimes that could be there. Okay?
So, how much of our discomfort is mismanagement, and how much of it is, you know, Krishna purifying us, taking us, because, you know, we have that.
Sometimes you could say the mismanagement is Krishna's arrangement. That's possible. But, you know, also, sometimes the discomfort is just our own mind.
Yeah.
So, you know, thinking I shouldn't be doing this, or this is not the right instruction.
Okay, so if a project is not working out, you know, how much are we responsible for, you know, tweaking things and seeing, okay, maybe this is not working, let's change it.
Yeah.
It seems like there will always be a level of discomfort or kind of,
well,
friction for the sake of helping the devotees.
I could tell you something that I was, I don't know if this will answer it, maybe it will. I was working on a project. It was actually a recording project, like a long time ago. 25, 30 years, 1989, however many years that is, 32 or something. So we were trying to get it to a certain level, you know, like the perfectionist in us, you know. So it was also using new technology, and when you use new technology, when it comes out, it's full of bugs. And so it was really, really difficult. I think the end result was good, but it was very, very difficult. And so Kavichandra Swami had been visiting San Diego when we were working on that project. And we were telling him about how difficult it is. And he said, Prabhupada said, if you try for something first class, there's going to be all kinds of obstacles and problems. If you try for second class, no. Third class, no. So that's something to consider. The inherent nature of trying to do things well brings difficulties with them. But we saw in Prabhupada, he had vision, and he wanted to serve Krishna with that vision. And so if it was difficult, it was just what it was. It didn't deter him. He accepted it. And, you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, this is like turning your question around, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that difficulties are opportunities. Because now, because it's difficult, I can show Krishna my devotion more than when it's easy. So he saw difficulties as opportunities. Oh, Krishna, you're so kind. You put this difficulty here because now I can show more devotion to you, because I have to jump over more hurdles or overcome more problems. So you could see it that way. Oh, thank you, Krishna. You know, you've allowed me to maybe do something that I wouldn't normally be able to do to show my devotion. So you could see it that way. But again, don't surrender yourself right out of devotional service. So you have needs. You have to take care of those needs. You have to be inspired. But sometimes it's just the mind's, you know, it's not understanding things properly. Subsequently, after that situation, which was many years ago, that was like 35 or something. I actually came to the point where I was put in situations that were quite difficult, that I didn't even know I could handle. But I stopped thinking about whether they're difficult or not, and I stopped thinking about whether I was happy or not, because it was no longer even on my radar. It was just, oh, this is a service that Prabhupada wants me to do. So does it matter if I'm happy or not, or it's easy or not? He wants me to do it, so I do it. And so it was actually very blissful, because I wasn't thinking if I like it or not. It was just, oh, this is like obviously what Krishna wants me to do. And One of the things I realized is that when you have that service mentality, I want to serve the Vaishnavas, I want to serve my spiritual master, then that satisfies you. That's where you get so much reciprocation. You know, Prabhupada reciprocates. Your spiritual master reciprocates. The devotees reciprocate. You know, there's an interesting thing that everybody needs, as a human need, to be acknowledged, that what you have some value. And some people, to become acknowledged, do all kinds of crazy things, like blow up buildings, right? Isn't it? At least you'll get in the newspaper, right? But if you help other people, if you serve them, you'll get acknowledged by them automatically. Right? So when we serve devotees, when we serve our spiritual master, you feel that reciprocation. Spiritually from Prabhupada and in person from devotees and your spiritual master. So I'm not trying to derail what you're saying, but kind of add more to it. Add more to the equations, because you don't want to just block all that out. And you never want to block out the opportunity to do something difficult, because it's an honor, actually, to do something difficult. To do something that you think you're not qualified to do, it causes you to become very humble to be able to do it, because you're putting yourself in Krishna's hands and you're telling him, I don't have the qualification to do this, you have to help me. And you really feel, because it seems impossible, you really feel humbled by it. And if Krishna wants you to do it, you say, okay, Krishna, it seems you want me to do it, I'm going to need you to help me. And then you put yourself out. And it's amazing how much Krishna helps. He sends people, gives you intelligence, energy, so many things. So it's kind of, I always personally found it was exciting to try to step out of the box and do something that I couldn't do. For that reason, that I kind of knew in the back of my mind that Krishna would come at some point and make it happen, and I just wanted to see that. And I thought, it's an exciting way to live, isn't it? Let's see the fun, Krishna, you can laugh at me for trying to do this, but I'm actually seriously trying to do it, so. Ananyas chaitanto mam. You know, yoga kshema vahamyaham, so I'm waiting for it. You want to hear something? One thing that Prabhupada said is so interesting to discuss and hear. Was this conversation in which a devotee was asking Prabhupada, how do you become determined to follow the principles? And Prabhupada said, by following the principles, which didn't seem like Prabhupada understood it. But he did understand it. And so he explained that when you want Krishna to kick in, you have to make some investment. So invest in 16 rounds and 4 principles. Put your money there. Krishna will multiply it tenfold, hundredfold. Right? So you don't have to worry about making the 1,000 or 10,000 or 100,000. You just have to worry about getting that first 100 down, and Krishna will multiply it. So Prabhupada's saying, you commit yourself to just chanting your rounds and following these principles, and all the determination you need to continue, Krishna will give you. After you do that, not before, after. So he wants to see what you're doing. But then recently I read something by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, which is similar. And he said, you cannot desire to serve Krishna of your own, like we might say. Prabhus, we should desire to serve Krishna. And now he says, you can't desire. It's like, oh great, I can retire. Just sit back and relax, and I have no control of my desire. Not exactly like that, but what he said is, the desire to serve and love Krishna is inherent. So you can't just manifest it because you want to. But you have to do the process of sadhana for it to manifest. So he said, you do your part, the sadhana, the desire will come from that, it will manifest as a byproduct. So bhakti is a lot like that. You do a little, and then there's a gap. Okay, this is how much you can do. But you want to come up to here, because that's the goal. And so, but you don't have the intelligence or strength for this area. So Krishna says, well, just come up to here, and then the elevator will take you up here. And that's called kripa, mercy. So sometimes we can be daring and say, okay, Krishna, I can't come up here, whether it's a level of advancement or service, but I can do this, and with faith that you'll put me on the elevator. So, you know, that also solves the problem when we think, I could never be Krishna conscious, or I could never be that advanced. Maybe that's true. On our own, that's true. But if you do the process, then Krishna will take that investment, that effort, that attempt, and then he will make it happen. And we see that all the time, isn't it? Yes?
What do you say to people who haven't had that elevator yet?
Be patient, have faith?
You have to, you know, step out of your comfort zone before Krishna pulls the elevator in, generally. But I would also say, if you look at how you became a devotee, there was an elevator there, you know, isn't it? You know? Right, you know. How many devotees found Bhagavad Gita's in trash cans when they were throwing their lunch plate out? You know? Like, we were just reading this story the other day. There was a devotee, I think she was 18 years old, doing meditation on a beach in Hawaii, or 17 years old, like 1968, doing meditation, reading Bhagavad Gita since she's 14. That was, I think, before Prabhupada came, or right around the time Prabhupada came. She never met Prabhupada. Meditating, reading Bhagavad Gita, living alone on a beach in Hawaii, and while she's meditating, a flyer falls on her lap out of nowhere. What does the flyer say? A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami giving class at this place. How does that happen? So I think, you know, all of us, the fact that we're here, had some kind of mystical experience. I had an experience where I was living in Berkeley as a student, and I walked into a bookstore, and I never read books outside of textbooks for classes. I wasn't interested. I was more into music and sports and hanging out than just sitting alone reading. At that point in my life, I didn't read much. And I was in a bookstore. Why would I be in a bookstore if I didn't read? Why would anyone be in a bookstore who never bought a book outside of the bookstore at school for the text in class? Doesn't make any sense, right? And of all the books in the bookstore, why is it that I pulled Bhagavad Gita off the shelf? So, we all have stories like that, isn't it? So, why not continue with the stories? Just, you know, go to the next level and see what Krishna does. When we understand this gap, this idea of this gap, that we can't fill that gap on our own, we can only make the investment. All right, you make a greater investment, you'll get more return. But when you understand the gap, you say, okay, Krishna, I will do it. So, when Prabhupada was given the order to come to America, he thought it was impossible. He actually thought it was impossible. But it's not that he didn't come. He thought it was impossible, and he thought he was unqualified, and he came. So that's stepping way out of the box, isn't it? Way out of the comfort zone, like way, way out. And so if you read Prabhupada's poem, you can see how he was thinking. I don't know how this is going to work. I don't have the qualification. But Guru Maharaj, if you want it to work, you can make it happen. He was willing to make the investment of getting on the boat and trying with faith that his Guru Maharaj and Krishna would do everything else. They would give him the right words. They would open the hearts of people so they would understand. And by their mercy, he would become successful. By his qualification, he would not be successful. That's how it works. So understanding that it works that way, then it's not so difficult to step out of the box a little bit. Because you know, if you have faith, Krishna will catch you. Then why not? Why not try? Maybe not something so big, but something more. Someone else want to ask a question or make a comment about this? Ms. Parthasarathy has the Shakti to ask More questions? Yeah.
I was just thinking that when Arjuna had a difficulty or kind of suffering, you can say, but then Krishna removed his suffering by pointing out that his focus was in a wrong place. Mm-hmm. He was identifying his functional role as a Kshatriya or a Arjuna to protect his family from the aggressor, and he didn't want to fight against the aggressor because aggressor are his family, cousins, grandfather. So then conclusion came that this is not his main focus. His focus should be his fundamental identity as a soul belongs to Krishna. And he realized, then his apparent suffering disappeared from him.
Yeah.
But what was the conclusion? That he was born with a particular psychophysical nature, the Kshatriya, that he has to engage. So whatever nature we are born with, it has to be engaged under the fundamental identity that I am a servant of my Guru or servant of Krishna, servant of the servant. Then we see even in the war, 18 days, I mean many instances now, I think. One example, like on 14th day, Jayadrata, it's not that Arjuna was not going through struggle. He went through struggle. He even took a vow to kill Jayadrata before sunset, otherwise he will throw himself. And right in front of Krishna he is doing this. Somebody may put a logic, didn't he hear Bhagavad Gita? Why he is not following? No, this is actually according to Bhagavad Gita. But the point was that when Krishna asked him, why you take such a serious vow to do this? So then he says, well, you know my power, I don't have any power. But I know your power, you have unlimited power. We can do together, win the war. And it's interestingly, Prabhupada said, just like Arjuna took advantage of Krishna's help, we should take advantage of Krishna's help in our spiritual path. Hmm. Then, at the end of 14th day, he won. So emotional game, I was listening other day when one Indian gentleman said, Prabhupada, Arjuna heard Bhagavad Gita, then why is he emotional when his son died? He's crying. So he's going, complaining. The struggle is still there. Prabhupada said, did he give up fighting? He said, no. So then why are you complaining? Arjuna did not complain. You are complaining. So the point is that once we are situated and understand that our service is to please Krishna through Guru, then the struggle becomes actually enhancing our devotion. It's not that struggle will disappear, I'll become completely free. No, that's not what Bhagavad Gita teaches.
And until you have prema, or at least bhava, well, we'll say at least ruchi, yeah, there's going to be a good fight going on. Maya's going to get you. I know that man. I met him. Yeah. Hare Krishna. Thank you.
Hare Krishna. I'm continuing a little bit on that thought of Prabhu's question. And sometimes it seems like we are following the principles, we're chanting, and then there's we're kind of waiting for some kind of a personal instructions besides that. Or
personal instruction?
A personal instruction.
From Krishna? From within? Some revelation?
Yeah, and it seems like we're getting a lot of instructions around. I mean, there's unlimited.
Yes.
You know, Mother Mukhya gave us some instructions today. But we go to every temple and every devotee, and he will give us some instructions. But that relevant instruction for us, or some kind of mentorship, if you can call it, it's kind of hard to find.
You're talking about a person to be a mentor rather than the super soul?
Besides the super soul, maybe?
Yeah. There are lots of mentors here. I'll help you. Where do you live?
I live in Madison, between here and Tallahassee. Yeah.
There's lots of great devotees here. We can find you a mentor. I'll find you one, okay?
Okay.
There are many sitting right here. Any volunteers?
You can also say a clear direction.
Does my calling come from within? Do I decide to do it? Is it something outside of myself? You know, I'm not sure my guru is going to tell me to go distribute books in America, you know, something so specific. Or
well, you know, Prabhupada wanted all of us to distribute books. But naturally, some people gravitated towards more artistic activity, more towards writing, some towards management, leadership, teaching, and so forth. So it's quite a natural process, but initially, we all tried to be involved in helping Prabhupada with his books, because that's what he wanted. And so, but at the same time, we saw the devotees took their natural propensities and just used them in the book distribution, you know, the editors. Most of the editors were not great book distributors. Most of the writers were not great book distributors. And but it's interesting because even if you see different managers or leaders, they have different ways of doing it. Some people, you know, somehow or other Krishna wants them as leaders, but they're total Brahmins. And they lead totally brahminically, because it's their nature. They lead just by inspiring talks. And then everyone else manages. And then they go back and read more. So I don't think you can escape your nature. Even if you're kind of out of your nature, let's say you're a Brahmin, but you have a leadership role, you'll do it brahminically. It's just when you're supposed to be a Brahmin and you do it like a Kshatriya, that's more problematic. Because there's not much leeway for them. But it becomes more obvious as you become older. In traditional society, the guru would see your nature through astrology and through being with you, and then would put you on that track, because then he would also understand your ashram, what ashram you should be in. Varna and ashram is your stability. So that's important. It's important to understand your nature. But then we have the problem now. You know, your nature may be to be a writer, but you decide to get married and you can't make a cent writing. Now what do? Drive a truck, paint houses, sell insurance, go back to school, get a degree in something you don't like to do. Sometimes we have to do that. But at least within devotional service, we can try to engage our nature. And it'll become obvious. You'll naturally gravitate. But you're a young devotee now, so you're still in boot camp, kind of. I mean, you're still in the, you're not in boot camp, you're out on the battleground. Right? Yes? Yeah.
Hello. Well, this makes me very nervous. I'm very, very new about this Krishna consciousness.
Okay.
So I have 1,000 questions, but of course not. But one question would be, like, I start reading, but I want to know what will be the best order for the reading, because I start reading the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, and then I was like confused, then I start reading the Mahabharata and a little bit of the Bhagavad Gita, and I have the Bhagavatam now, so I don't know which one would be the best order so I can understand more about bhakti.
Yeah, Bhagavad Gita would be best, but the best would be to be able to read in a group that's reading or teaching something. Whatever book they're, even if they were teaching Lord Chaitanya's teachings, which is pretty esoteric, but in that group you would understand better. So, do we have classes anymore in the evenings here? Does anybody know? Or where do you live?
Lake City.
Oh. Every morning, 8 o'clock, you want to come? What?
And,
yeah, we have. We can help you get the schedule. And plus, it's online. But it's better at this point to study. Then, when you study on, you can do both. But when you study in the group, then when you read,
reading, it will be better.
And then you'll have someone you can ask questions to. Yeah. Okay. Now we need two mentors.
So it's just a small question. No. Oh, sorry, sir.
Some of those short books may help you. Very helpful.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, like maybe I start with the big ones, so I don't know.
We can volunteer to be hermit.
Okay, that sounds good. Disciplic succession.
Yeah. Oh, you live close to
it?
Oh, okay. So that would be another question. So I live in Lake City, and I want to get more service and stuff, but I don't know who I approach to offer, like, a little bit of whatever.
Where's Prang Govinda right now, when we need him? We'll,
I'm sorry.
After class,
okay.
We'll give you all the service you want.
Okay.
That is no problem. Don't worry.
Well, thank you. I want to do it.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
So I have a question. About 6 months back, you were there in the Mangal Aarti, and I was there, and you were playing kirtan. And I was so amazed the way you were playing kirtan, and I was totally drowned into it. And after the Mangal Aarti, I asked, how can I pray like you, And natural answer would be, you know, oh, hey, practice, you know, it will come by time, you know, just keep practicing, keep on, just regular things. And, you know, it depends upon your patience, depends upon your effort and all that. But you said something, next birth.
I don't know if it was a nice thing. You're going to repeat it here?
So, I and since then I'm thinking, what were you thinking when you said that?
What I was thinking is, some people in this lifetime are not so gifted in certain areas, and no matter how much they practice, they may never get it, right?
Absolutely, and that's absolutely right, and I thought that's probably the reason.
Yeah. But I'm not a good person to ask musical questions, because I just listen and I play, and I don't study, because that's... So, if you ask me, how do you learn to play the harmonium? I go, you just play it. How do you learn to play? Just pick it up, hold it, and play. So I'm not a good person to ask, because that's how I learn. So I kind of feel that way, you know. But it's not entirely true. You can learn. But there's also limitations. I don't want to discourage you, but don't practice during kirtan.
Absolutely.
Sometimes during kirtans, Prabhupada would stop people who weren't playing right, because it was disturbing, you know. So, we're not trying to be expert musicians, but at least good enough to keep on beat, so it doesn't distract us from our meditation. So, it was kind of said half jesting, but I was on my way out. It was early in the morning, so it was like half-half. You know. I can be sarcastic, so especially when I'm rushing out. Okay. Yes.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
My humble obeisances. Back on the topic of discomfort in bhakti,
mm-hmm.
I've found myself in situations sometimes where I wasn't sure if I should take my discomfort as an opportunity to strengthen my bhakti and practice selflessness, or if it was actually harmful my bhakti. So how can I decipher between the two?
Well, in situations like that, it's good to get advice from more experienced devotees, I mean, obviously, eventually you'll know when you suffer, if that's where you're heading, but you probably want to avoid that. But sometimes you will kind of feel, I've hit my limit. I can't advance beyond this at this point because I'm still young. Or even if you're older, it's just the target shifts. So if you feel like this is actually draining me to try to hit this target, then you know, okay, you know. It's like, you know, high jumping. Put it down a little bit. I can do that. Okay, keep practicing that. Okay, let's put it up now. So, it's, you know, we're not expected to advance very quickly. And I think we all expect that we should advance more quickly than we are. But we're coming from a background where we haven't practiced bhakti for so many lifetimes. So it's not like we can just jump to the moon. It seems like we can, but there are different factors that are going to create it. And so you, it's like you know in your head what you can do, what you want to do. That's one thing. But whether you can do it is another thing. And sometimes we just get in our head and we don't distinguish whether between what's in our head and what we can do is different. Then usually it is. Because what's in our head is like, we're reading, this is what I should be doing, and where I should be. So, realistic, you know, it's kind of a balance, where you don't want to become apathetic or lethargic or complacent, but you don't want to burn out either. So there's somewhere in between, where it's healthy, you're being pushed, but not burnt. Something like that. I think, you know, if you understand that, I think you'll be able to feel it, and then you can discuss with devotees. Say, this is how I'm feeling, that this is about good for me right now. And talk to them. And they might say, oh, you can do much better. Or they might say, that's even too much. Sometimes we can't tell because objectivity is not always easy. Right? So.
Thank you very much.
Hi, Krishna. I was just thinking that sometimes the deepest realizations come from, like, you know, your lowest points. And so that suffering, and even in bhakti, you're trying so hard and you think, like, I'm going to be a pure devotee right now. Yeah. And when you fail, ultimately you suffer a lot and maybe you even go away, but that realization hits very hard. And so in that way, if you even get just one realization, you can become kind of like masochistic. Like you kind of like are like, this is how the realization comes. So how can we avoid that and still try to get that deep realization?
Avoid being masochistic? I think it's the same answer, because Sukadeva Goswami told Prakshit Maharaj, he said, material attachment is deeply rooted. And I think sometimes we underestimate how deeply rooted it is. And sometimes Krishna puts us into situations where we slip, and then we realize, oh, this conditioning is deeper than I thought. And I'm not as advanced as I thought I was. Or maybe my sadhana was weak. And I thought, you know, I build my sadhana up, I feel strong, and then I think I can coast. And it's like, no, you can't coast. You know, you're not better yet, you have to keep it up. So sometimes that happens, and we can be grateful for that because it's just a reality check for us, so to speak. Also, when I was a young devotee, one of my godbrothers told me something, and I had such a hard time believing it then, and now it's obvious. He said that Prabhupada said, it will be really rare for a devotee to perfectly follow all the regular principles his whole life. And I thought, like, well, that doesn't sound right, because at that point I was following, I didn't have a problem. But then we see it's much more difficult over the long run than we thought in the beginning. In the beginning we have lots of momentum. We're coming out of the material world. We don't like it, we don't want it. But 10, 15 years later, that's where it's more difficult. And so some acknowledgement of how deeply we're conditioned will help, so you won't be surprised when you see it. sometimes if you're chanting really good rounds, you see a lot of dirt comes up. And it's also surprising and shocking. But what's interesting is that where did it come up from? Not outside of us. It came up from inside of us. We just weren't aware of it. So like, I didn't think I had that in me. No, you did have it in you. You just weren't purified enough to see it inside of you. So it's kind of a paradox, because we see it when we're purified, and then it scares us that we see it and think, I didn't know I was that fallen. Yeah, you didn't know because you weren't pure enough to know how fallen you were. And now you're more pure, so now you know, so you can think, okay, I'm advancing. Krishna's revealing my conditioning. That means I'm advancing, and I have to learn to accept this reality that is going to take longer than I initially thought. I'm more conditioned than I thought. And if you read Bhagavatam, there's so many stories of people having difficulty, some of who are pretty advanced. And it just shows how deeply conditioned we are. And you have the other side, Thakur Haridas, in the face of Maya, chanting Maya away. So that, you know, that's always there potentially. Right? So you know, you want to be an American Idol, you go on and you sing and they're like, nah, get off. You know, it's like you just don't have a voice in this lifetime. You know, you can practice forever, but you know, this may not be the lifetime for it. Right? So you just have to accept that. Yeah. Maybe I should be an artist instead of a singer. You know, something like that. So that's life, ladies and gentlemen. It's just reality, you know. Whether it's material or spiritual, right? It's the reality. We are who we are. And our present stage now has a lot to do with our advancement in the last life, right? So, I wish I were more advanced. Yeah, well, it's too late for that now. That's, you know, that was for the last life. You know, you could have done more in the last one. But if you wish you were more advanced, then take charge now. Yes? Last question.
Oh, last question?
Well, I mean, we can have more if you want. You can all leave if you want. Just me and Partha will stay. It's all up to you. I don't want to keep you here, but you know, feel free to go. Yes.
I've 1.5 because this little one just sprang up as you were talking about the American Idol thing, and some people may not have the voice in that lifetime. Is there something exceptional in everyone that is waiting to be released?
Yeah. One devotee said, "Srila Prabhupada, I feel useless." And Prabhupada said, "Everyone is useful for something. You know, maybe you're useful for peeling potatoes. That's your, you know, your destiny in this lifetime. I peel a mean potato, Prabhu. Nobody peels potatoes like me. I'm fast and I'm clean." We had a devotee in San Diego, and he would clean pots all day and sing and smile. And it was like his thing was cleaning pots. He wouldn't want to do any other. Prabhu, you want to go on the altar? No, I can't. He was from Mexico. Ain't cleaning pots only. No, that's Indian accent. Anyway, he would clean pots, and he was so happy. He was always smiling and blissful, and he loved it. And so you know, some people are meant to clean pots, and some people are meant to get Nobel prizes, and you know. But in Krishna's vision, it's all like, you know, you're smart, but compared to him, it's nothing. You sing well, but not compared to him. You know, so you're not going to impress Krishna with your talent and your intelligence, that's for sure. But you'll impress him with your bhakti, so it doesn't really matter. Right? You know that story? The prostitute, she's a devotee, and she thinks, "Oh, I'm so bad, I'm a prostitute, this is horrible, Krishna, you know. You probably don't like me, please forgive me, probably send me to hell." And then the Brahmin, who's always thinking, "This prostitute is so bad, she's so bad." Right? So where does the prostitute go in her next life? To Krishna, because she's always thinking of Krishna. Where does the Brahmin go in his next life? What's he thinking of at the time of death? And he's a Brahmin, and he knows all the mantras, tantras, samskaras, pujas, yajnas. And what's he meditating on? How bad this prostitute is. So, yeah. We, you know, I think every one of us wishes we were better at what we do or could do things we can't, isn't it? But, you know, it's like, do what you can do for Krishna, and you know, whatever. I wish I was smarter. I wish I could do so many things better. I wish people could just look at me and start chanting Hare Krishna. You know, but you know, I'm not there yet. Working on it, still working on it. But I may never get there in this life. I don't know, you know, if I can get that pure. Right? Well, I know, maybe if I wear a t-shirt that says the Mahamantra, then maybe they'll, you know, that's second best, right? Yeah, that, that should work a little bit. With flashing neon lights, and then they'll all look at it. But it's a reality. I'll tell you a funny story. Prabhupada is so witty. So, one of Prabhupada's servants, this is in the early days, he was asking Prabhupada, he said, Srila Prabhupada, does LSD destroy brain cells? Because, you know, every devotee in those days, practically, had taken it. So, kind of, you know, he was wondering, does LSD destroy brain cells? Prabhupada said, yes. Will they ever come back? Prabhupada, no. Srila Prabhupada, what do? Use whatever you have left. So, you know, I think that's the, you know, it's just like, whatever you have, you know. Yeah. Whatever brain you have left, whatever talent you have left, whatever it is, just use it. And, you know, and don't be envious of those who are, you know, have more than you. It's okay. You have something they don't have. They have something you don't have. Everyone that you're envious of or jealous of, you have something they don't have. And so don't worry about what they have, just use what you have for Krishna service, and then, you know. Prabhupada was, you know, happy with everyone's sincerity. I did so many stupid things. And Prabhupada knew that. But he never called me stupid, at least not to my face. He may have said to other devotees, he's really stupid. But that wasn't the way he dealt with us, even though we did stupid things. Generally, he would just give us the right instruction. He didn't want us to think we're stupid. Didn't want to discourage us. In fact, he told us we were intelligent. It's okay. Thank you. You have another question? All right. You can all leave if you want. I really don't want to keep you here. But Partha's dying to ask a question, so if you want to go, please do. Yes, one last question.
So this is about, I guess you could say, Krishna's messaging to us. And how much does he really get involved in things in specifics, you could say?
Such as,
I should be doing this or should be doing that, Krishna's going to guide me this way or that way. Is it more like he just wants a relationship with me, and then however I express that, that's up to me, and he
no,
doesn't really
not necessarily. Mind. Depending on your need and desire.
Can you explain?
As much as you need, Krishna will guide you. And he might guide you to a person who will guide you also. But whatever you need, Krishna will supply it. It could be through Paramatma, could be through Guru, could be through a God brother, God sister. You want it, he'll supply it. If you don't care, you don't get it. You'll always get it. And maybe it'll take a while before you get the answer or the guidance. And maybe Maya will give you guidance and you'll think it's Krishna. And then you'll find out the hard way. But Didami Buddha Yogam Tam means he will guide you back to Godhead. And he will guide you in your service as far as you can be guided. And of course there are limitations in the world. We're not perfect. But Prabhupada always would say, Krishna will give you intelligence. You know, the artist wanted to go to art school and Prabhupada said, no, just paint. Krishna will show you how to paint. He'll be your art teacher. You don't need to go to art school. That's interesting, right? You're waiting for some guidance, you're not getting it.
I'm getting guidance, but specifics are unclear, and that's okay.
Yeah, and some specifics weren't even clear to Prabhupada sometimes.
Yeah.
It becomes clear later. Yeah, and that's okay. It's just what we're working with.
I am hesitant in how much I should take to get to where I am flourishing, and how much, like, I'm waiting for Krishna to tell me go this way, or is he not going to say anything like, hey, approach me how you want, and then I go that way.
Sometimes you just have to ask somebody. It may not be clear. Sometimes it's not clear. Sometimes we discuss with devotees because we're not clear. Mm-hmm. Even senior devotees are not clear in everything, always, in what they should do. Tamal Krishna Maharaj was at one point thinking of going back to university. There was a Vidyananda Maharaj was trying to convince him. And he didn't know if Prabhupada wanted him to do that or not. He wasn't convinced. He thought, This is what I should do now. Influence the academy. We need more Vaishnavas in the academy. And he talked about 17 God letters for months and months and months before he decided. And finally he decided to do it. But it was a long, slow process. It wasn't clear. So that's okay. And that's the sincerity of a devotee. Sometimes they don't know and they want to make sure they're doing the right thing, so they discuss it, discuss, until they feel, this is what Prabhupada is telling me to do. This is what Krishna is telling me to do. We all go through this, and you'll go through this your whole life. What about getting married? Should I get married? Should I marry this one? Should I marry that one? Should I not marry at all? You see, you know, not easy decisions. It takes time. That's why we have God brothers, God sisters, aunts and uncles, gurus, Prabhupada, so we can discuss.
Okay. You give me the mic.
The mic is glued to his hand. Okay, last question, everyone.
So there,
may my words come true.
There are some system failures at the place where I serve, and I took it kind of how you were describing that, you know, Krishna is building my sincerity and I should serve through it and, you know, things will kind of work itself out. And another senior devotee who's a manager there was in a similar boat that, you know, Krishna's sending me a personal message by the tumultuousness of what's going on. But it affects the project, and so we're dealing with it, okay, how can we change things? So I'm wondering, you know, would Krishna use a project kind of going on there a little bit to teach a specific person? Or?
Yeah, sometimes. Sometimes he'll do that to teach the whole movement something. But we have to take responsibility for it going under. But often in retrospect, we'll see that it was actually necessary in the growth of the project or our personal growth, that we wouldn't have learned any other way. You know, when I decided to take disciples, I was told there is a course you have to take. And in the course, they put a lot of emphasis on maintaining spiritual strength, especially because if you become a leader and a spiritual master, you have to maintain your spiritual life very strongly. And some of those spiritual masters who came before us were negligent and did not maintain their spiritual life well. And so while they were teaching that, I was thinking, you know, I think this was like maybe 2013 when I was taking it, or 2012. I was thinking, you really don't need to teach this because we've learned our lesson. these God brothers who failed before us taught us very, very deep lessons about what not to do. And a lot of us, you know, felt like, well, maybe it was their desire, maybe it was Krishna's taking their desire to teach us. And we made many mistakes that maybe were necessary to establish a stronger foundation. Of course, the individuals have to take, can't say, well, I fell down to teach you all. No. But it sometimes can be seen that way, that we sometimes you need a few bad examples to know what not to do. A few mistakes do help. Don't do this. This doesn't work. But that can be there. It's possible. But we should always feel, you know, it was my mistake, but maybe we needed this mistake. That's possible.
It seems unfair for Krishna to cause disaster to teach.
Well, sometimes there are teachings that in a certain time and situation we can't learn unless something goes wrong. Sometimes it's like that. And so, but you know, in the scheme of things of 10,000 years, one little mistake here in this little temple, which could resolve all future mistakes for the next 10,000 years, is not such a bad thing. You know, there's a little collateral damage, a few people suffered, but now for the next 10,000 years, we're not going to ever make this mistake again, and no one will suffer from this. So, good look at it that way. Okay? Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Tai Go Premanandi Hari Hari. Hare Krishna. Gauranga. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Maybe artists.